Hey folks, and welcome. We have decided to keep rolling with this Game Biz segment where we talk about critical game industry trends and strategic insights with myself, Joseph Kim, Eric Kress, and Chris Petrovic. Welcome, guys.
Good to be back.
All right.
It's good to see you.
So today we are going to be talking about the current state of game company growth and various growth strategies being deployed by different game companies. I actually wrote on some of these thoughts as part of the Games Makers newsletter. But I thought ahead of talking about these different sort of growth strategies that we could first just get a quick pulse in terms of the market. And Chris, I know you're in the thick of it in terms of like, you know, looking at different companies and looking at M&A at FunPlus. What are you seeing right now as far as M&A is concerned in terms of like whether it's earlier stage or just kind of the strategy by the bigger companies as well?
Yeah, I think it's more of the same, you know, more of the same at the big wanting to and needing to get bigger through M&A. And, you know, I think the healthy tension that's existing is that, you know, I think as we talked on the last episode, and it's probably been talked about, you know, ad nauseum, is that the number of at-scale independent players that are actionable is dwindling. And right. I think with, you know, Playdemic being the newest forever franchise level opportunity that was just taken off the board, you know, it's hard, you're hard pressed to count on more than one hand, you know, if you look at the top grossing charts, at least, you know, ones that out there that are actionable. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the big guys, the EAs, the Zyngas, the Playticas of the world, you know, continue to deploy capital in this regard. Yeah. I know you wrote about Jam City going after earlier M&A. I think that's more of a function of you know, what they have at their disposal in terms of, you know, capital. I think now being a public company, they have a currency, a secondary currency that can help. But, you know, I think it's not changing. It's not changing. That trajectory is not changing anytime soon. I think the good thing about our industry is you're always one hit game away from being in that category.
That's right.
So,
yeah. Yeah. And speaking of Playdemic, Eric, I don't know how much you can talk about since you're doing some stuff for Warner Brothers, but I mean, isn't the writing on the wall there that the rest of the Warner assets are probably going to be up for grabs? What do you guys think in terms of the other stuff at Warner Brothers?
I can't comment on that. What I can comment on is that, you know, like the non-core assets that are not related to Warner, you know, make sense to jettison as, you know, they're going to probably focus more on, you know, Warner IP, but, and that was a great asset, to sell at $1.4 billion, 7x trailing revenue. It looked like, from the Slack channel. Like I said earlier, I don't get any, I get all my information from the Slack channel, let everyone else do the work. Right. But no, I mean, it seems like somewhere around that, but you imagine it's super profitable if it's just that team. Right, because it's a relatively small team and they're generating quite a bit of revenue, so it's probably a good deal for EA from that perspective. But revenue-wise, it seems high. Dude, EA has been sitting on $5 billion in cash for decades, and now they've spent like $5 billion. Right?
Yeah, they're
crazy.
Great, good for those guys.
No, I think it's great. I think it's amazing.
To your point on the rest of the assets, though, I think David Haddad. Some of his comments that were quoted in some of the analyst reports that came into my inbox since the deal was announced today kind of reinforces their positioning that actually the Warner Games studio and those assets are going to be part of the transition over to Discovery as part of the core Warner Brothers assets, because what's left now of Warner Brothers Games is focusing, as Chris said, on their core IP. And so that's more in line with how entertainment properties function. So I think it's actually, this is probably the one and only asset that's going to be peeled off from Warner Brothers Games, if you believe how they're positioning this, for sure. And in terms of the price tag, you know, you can look at it from a revenue perspective, you look at it from an EBITDA perspective, you can look at it from a upside perspective, given that my assumption is that Warner Brothers was not, deploying marketing to the fullest potential there, as they're known for preserving profitability. So I think perhaps EA and others saw a lot of upside. I'm sure it was a competitive bidding situation, so I'm sure this went through a couple different turns of what the price tag ended up being. I think the other interesting thing to note that probably doesn't come across in any of this is that, you know, with these transactions that are asset sales, you know, you don't get to hedge your bets by crafting an earnout structure. So you know, in addition to the price tag, there was probably some retention-based compensation that got put in there in order to keep the team intact, because, you know, they didn't buy an entity, they bought an asset. So there's two parts of that story, and you know, I'm sure it'll bear itself out over time in terms of how well they structure that.
And you know what really sucks though for these guys, if my interpretation is correct, is that they got bought for a song at Warner, right? The Playdemic guys. So they got bought TT for Games, basically right. Nothing, right? Like, I don't know, was it $50 million or something?
It was before Golf Clash launched fully.
Right. And so they didn't get paid out for that acquisition all that much, maybe a little bit. And then now they're getting sold by Warner, right? So I don't know how much that gate flew back to them, right? But if they had wholly owned this thing, they would have been billionaires, you know? But now, I don't know, dude. They didn't get the payout that they probably deserve for creating, you know, a really amazing franchise. And then the other thing I would think about from EA's perspective is that the Golf Clash model could work across other sports. Like, you know, tap sports from Glue makes sense as well, but they could actually kind of potentially replicate that success across some of the sports that EA does, maybe. So there could be some quote unquote synergies there, I suppose. It seems like a good deal overall. I mean, clearly EA is not fucking around. You know, they're going balls deep into mobile finally after like 6 years of doing nothing, you know? So it's like, it's good.
Oh, I see what you did there. Golf Clash. I see you.
You like that, huh? That was on the fly.
I see what you did there, Chris.
That was on the fly. Just saying.
So while we're on the sports topic, why don't we talk about the Nordeus deal?
Oh, okay.
I thought that was a great deal for Take-Two. I mean, I'm a little partial. I've known Bronco for a long time.
Right.
Serbia is my homeland, where my parents are from. So I was glad for that country to be put on the map a little bit on the game side. I just think that they'll do great things under a larger scale, a parent like Take-Two that can help them with their IP licensing aspirations, with taking top 11 to the next level. I know they've had struggles making new games, but this, you know, this is a sustainable franchise that, you know, that I think will just be an annuity for them while they invest in other things.
All right. Despite your inherent bias, I will agree that this acquisition makes the most sense out of the other ones, because the other ones made no sense, like Social Point, whatever, that company made no sense.
And Two Dots, Take-Two. Yeah.
And Two Dots makes no sense. Like those, I don't even know how you even can rationalize that to any management team, right? But having a top 11 game and competing directly against FIFA in mobile is freaking awesome, right? Like I think that's smart. The problem is that I don't think Take-Two literally has one resource in mobile to manage this shit, right? They don't know what they're doing. They have, as far as I know, they have nobody. So it's like,
Isn't the head of Two Dots now their head of mobile?
Well, okay, but that doesn't help.
Yeah, I don't know what that says.
That's exactly the problem, right? Like, you can't navigate. Where is Two Dots located anyway? Like, you can't navigate
New York.
This studio org and try to make a cohesive strategy without centralized management around mobile. And I've said a million times, and this is why the EA thing was so disastrous, is that you need to separate mobile into their own org, right? Create a city-state model in which, like, someone is managing the whole thing. The minute you start putting it in with existing AAA teams, it's a disaster, right? And that's why the fact that NBA 2K is not a competitive game out there is because they're still selling a premium game for $7 every year. Like, idiots. Like, how did you do that? How does that even happen, right? Like, the examples are out there. It's really simple. Dude, build a free-to-play version of it. Anyway, so even though I think this is a great strategy on paper, the execution is going to be very, very challenging when you don't have an organization to manage this stuff, you know? So I think they have a long way to go of realizing the potential synergies, you know, doing with Nordeus. But good for Nordeus, you know, and good for your countrymen.
Yes.
Yeah. Have we seen any? I haven't actually heard from an EA perspective whether there's been any recent updates as far as reorganization or how they're going to organize as far as mobile is concerned. But have you guys heard anything on that side?
Oh, it's a shit show, but. I think they'll figure it out. I mean, I think, you know, I think they just lost their head of UA, you know, obviously she was, you know, seeing the writing on the wall that it's going to be a challenge because UA's, they have no infrastructure at EA. It's like Zynga, right? Zynga talks about how much infrastructure they have on UA side or you know, whatever quantitative stuff. And that may be true for a social casino, but probably not across the whole organization. But EA is like 10 years behind that, you know? So it's like,
I remember it was a very lean org. Like at least 2 or 3 years ago, their whole UA org was like 5 people.
They lost everybody.
It's pretty small.
They have nobody. They're rebuilding from scratch since Jeff Karp took over, right? So luckily with Glue and some of the other acquisitions that they're doing, they're going to build that. But like managing that is going to be a big challenge for Jeff and the rest of the team. And he needs some more lieutenants that actually can do this too. I don't really see any bigwigs going over there, but I may be wrong. I haven't been following it too closely.
Any thoughts on any other moves as far as acquisitions? Do we think anything's going to happen with some of the other bigger players left on the market, whether it's...
I want to make a quick comment what Chris said, and I've been saying this a while. I don't think there's that many left, right, at scale. And we're talking about scale of like 100 million plus type revenue numbers, right? So, I mean, I think you said you can count on your one hand, maybe. So this creates a big challenge, right? Because we've just seen this huge acquisition spree from Stillfront, Embracer, EA, obviously Take-Two and others. And so now what matters is organic growth. And that's where all of these guys are flailing, right? Even Zynga is flailing on organic growth. Stillfront, like that's, we got on the call with them a while back. They're talking about, you know, they've been doing acquisitions like no one's business, but their organic growth was like 20 points below the market, right? Last year in one of the biggest years for mobile, right? And so that's what people are going to be looking to going forward. And I think that's going to be a challenge because I think even with these big market cap capitalized companies, building hits is going to be more and more a challenge going forward. And so that's why I'm a little bit scared about Zynga. I'm certainly about SciPlay or Playtika or Scopely. I mean, all these companies have benefited from acquisitions. Scopely's done a little bit better in terms of managing their existing games, and EA and Take-Two, et cetera. So we'll see. But I think that's going to be a challenge, particularly for Stillfront.
Okay, the juiciest target left out there still, Tactile. You guys think they're going to remain independent, or does somebody finally take those guys out?
Knowing the CEO and knowing the culture of that studio, I think they're going to remain independent.
Remain independent. Okay.
I think the other one out there is at least if you consider it to be within the definition of Western studio is Moon Active.
Right. Right.
Yep. But if you look at I think the uncharted territory, or maybe not uncharted territory, but landmine ridden territory is kind of cross-border transactions, right? Because if you look at all the charts, you know, it's dominated mostly by Asian studios or Asian companies. And, you know, there isn't exactly a huge track record of east to west or west to east M&A. There's a few examples here and there, but nothing of the kind of significance that you would otherwise see in the kind of deals that Zynga has done and Stillfront and Embracer and EA. And there's a good reason for it. It's really hard to execute and manage, obviously, but that seems to be one of the few remaining vectors. And I guess the other one is, you know, on the cross-platform front, if you believe that there are companies that really want to go after it, but then you're competing with Microsoft and Sony that are trying to load the coffers up with first-party content. And so, there are a lot of independents out there that on the AAA side, they're going to be left hanging because they won't feel like they're going to be getting any love on the merchandising front from Microsoft or Sony, because they're not first party content. So that could also be an opportunity. But again, if that's a distressed sector of AAA, I don't even know if the mobile guys that are going cross platform would want to take that risk if there's no guarantee of placement and marketing support from the platforms.
Yeah, and the problem with that, the model is so different, I mean, I don't know how much you can speak about with Zynga, but if Zynga were to go after like AAA, free to play console PC type stuff, like the development costs would just eat at their margins, right? they would have to potentially reduce margins over time because of all the upfront costs, assuming that these things pay out. And it's just much more of a significant investment for a AAA console than a mobile game. So that's what.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd have to think that, I mean, obviously Zynga's first deal was, you know, not on, on the expensive side of the spectrum. That was more of a team acquisition, right? That's helping on a specific project. Yeah. So the risk is mitigated there. And I think also, you know, if you start looking at targets that are already paying for themselves through their current business, you know, that you can fund, keep funding, and, well, you know, while you invest in development, you know, there's a few out there that are self-sustaining that way. But the, you know, the target list is not very big.
No. I mean, the most of the...
Yeah. The other thing we might see is something like what Riot's starting to do, which is building out hybrid teams, right? Where you've got a team in the West, but also a huge team in China. And then they kind of work collaboratively on game projects. The other thing that I'm starting to hear a lot about is that, like, Glu, in order to get more margin, like post the EA acquisition, I'm hearing they're shifting a lot of stuff to India. Oh. So it seems like they're starting to restructure to try and get more margin by shifting a lot of stuff over to India. So
yeah, that's a synergy point that was identified, right? So Nick and team had a strategy of centralizing everything around a super HQ in the Bay Area. They had all those resources before, right? And they chose to go that way. And now they're being asked to go back in a different direction, which obviously makes sense. I mean, Zynga has run that playbook for a very long time. As you guys know, you know, their second oldest and second largest office is in India, and it's been doing live ops for a very, very long time. And it's taking on more and more games. And, you know, capacity and capabilities are still always a requirement in order to keep scaling that. But yeah, it's a smart thing to do.
Right. Maybe the next thing we could talk about is kind of this other growth strategy, which is around the integration of ad tech with content. And it seems like the two big players in this, I mean, AppLovin kind of pioneered the model. Zynga kind of has been following. Although one of the things that I mentioned in that newsletter is that they seem to have different strategies, right? Like AppLovin is clearly trying to become the Netflix of gaming and building kind of an ads as a platform type of play and really trying to become a content recommendation engine. It seems like Zynga is actually just trying to kind of adopt the current model that AppLovin has. And then we're starting to see other players starting to move into this direction as well. But do you guys have any high level thoughts as far as this model?
Let me go first because I want to hear Chris's positive spin on this, because Vudu just announced that they acquired some ad network that no one has ever heard of, right? Or at least Chris, the people that on the podcast, the Deconstructive Fund, had no idea what this company had ever, never heard of this company. This is Eric Seufert, right? Who should know? Like, so the fact that we're at the bottom of the barrel of these ad tech companies, right? And Vudu is acquiring them and expecting to build. And so the way I position that is like, Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley, whoever put like $200 million in this thing, just bought a bill of goods that was like, it's like completely worthless. And so now they're just buying the stupid ad tech company that no one had ever heard of so that they improve their valuation things, because AppLovin is trading at 20 times revenue, right? So now they go from a 5 times revenue to a 20 times revenue overnight because now they have some podunk ad tech company. And I'm like, this is just PR bullshit, right? This is like valuation arbitrage that has nothing to do with reality. Like the execution is where the challenge is going to be, but it's just it's a money grab, right? In my opinion, this is my humble opinion. So my thoughts on this is that AppLovin knows what they're doing, and they've done a great job of integrating both games and ad tech together because they've been doing it forever and they're really smart guys. I think they're limited in what type of IP works in that environment, which is super casual stuff because the core stuff is not working. And if anybody can be successful at that, AppLovin could be. But all this other bullshit, like with Zynga acquiring ad tech, they have no idea how to manage an ad tech company and do what they're suggesting that they can do, like doing what AppLovin is doing, because they're just not sophisticated enough and they don't have the people to actually execute against it. So it's just a lot of FOMO bullshit, like fear of missing out stuff, that people are doing these things, putting together a strategy, and they make sense on paper given how crazy the market is right now in terms of valuations, but the execution is going to get, they're going to get destroyed on the execution. And I think Vudu fits in that within that as well. They're never going to realize these synergies that this walled garden content fortress baloney that people keep talking about, because it's all about execution. It's not about just doing the acquisition. So that's my cynical view on this whole thing. But regardless of all of that, none of them are worth 20 times revenue. Like, it's just impossible to be worth 20 times revenue when you're a game company, right? Like, it doesn't even make sense. So what will end up happening is that the growth of these companies will be limited by the market and by their ability to get products out that make sense. And they will never realize the expectation that people have for these companies to have these meteoric growth. So revenue growth will start to decline over time is kind of my thinking, and their valuations will come back down to reality. That's my expert opinion. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of devil in the details that could, that you know, may not necessarily come out in the first instance. I think if you read a lot of the press around the Voodoo acquisition, for example, I mean, it sounds to me from what I was able to discern is that BidShake was actually Voodoo somehow helped them get off the ground, and Voodoo was one of their first customers and was an early design partner, and so it sounded like they actually had a hand in shaping the arc of that business to ultimately, I'm assuming, for their benefit, and the category that they're in. So if it was a practical enough acquisition price, and they were able to bring some of those costs in house, similar to what I assume, you know, is part of Zynga's logic was, not to compete with AppLovin, but just to optimize profitability by condensing the value chain. So I don't think that these companies are competing head to head with AppLovin. They're not looking to be the same thing as AppLovin per se, but I do think that there is some validity to the fact that there's also a desire to get some of that goodness that AppLovin has been getting in the market by being a vertically integrated company. Even though they look a lot more like Zynga than they look than the old version of themselves. So, yeah, I mean, I think we can't assume that there's the same.
Wait, Chris, one thing. But my problem is that AppLovin is Zynga. Like 85% of the revenue is being driven by their mobile games.
Right, it is now. That's right.
Right, and so and then 15% is you know, the ad tech stuff, right? And so basically it's a mobile game company with an ad tech component, right? And then this ad tech component is supposedly giving them some advantage in the marketplace, which clearly they've done very well with, but how leverageable is that going forward? And then to your point, or what you just said, is that this PR messaging, they are trying to push the idea that they deserve the multiples that AppLovin are, because now they are integrated companies, which they're not.
I don't think AppLovin deserves the valuation that it's getting. I mean, I think that whole thing was a shit show in terms of how they went to market and all the investors that bought into that story.
Okay.
Relative to actually, if you just took the time to you know, dig into the details, you would understand exactly what that company profile is versus what they were positioning themselves to be. And I'm not saying that they don't have the potential. I would not bet against Adam and team in terms of execution. I'm just more miffed by the froth that was created at the investor set for that opportunity, and you know, we've seen the kind of blowback that has happened as a result once AppLovin came to market. But those are super smart group of people there that are going to continue to execute. I just don't know how much longer the sheen is going to last of that, you know, that IPO positioning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I hope that our audience will take away, though, is that one, that the strategy behind AppLovin and Zynga are fundamentally different than that what AppLovin is trying to do. And I agree with you, like those guys are incredibly smart and ruthless. And so like what they're trying to do is fundamentally more difficult than what Zynga is trying to do. But I also think Zynga may be disappointed a bit in terms of they're thinking along the lines of, yes, they'll be able to build out like this ad network. You know, everyone else will just kind of jump in and share their data. I don't think that vision of the future is quite going to work out unless they're able to enable a lot of additional capabilities as far, like auto ROAS or other things of that nature. I think the other thing we might see is if like Voodoo is moving in the direction they're moving, I wouldn't be surprised to see further combination, for example, when we think about IronSource. In Iron Source being valued at, you know, $5 billion, $10 billion now. And, you know, potentially having a combination of, let's say, Iron Source and Voodoo at some point in the future where that might make sense. because I think what we have seen is ironSource has been watching AppLovin very closely. And, you know, it was kind of, I think that's probably the next move for ironSource, in order for ironSource to continue to sustain their valuations, which would be to build out their content in some way. Now, whether they try to move in a AppLovin direction or more of a Zynga direction, we'll see. But I do think that we might see some moves on that side.
I think the untold story here that's happening, and you use these two companies as a great example of this, is the people working in the background here. This is going to be a story of the big private equity firms driving the games industry.
Right.
If you think about who's right. You know, deploying money against ad networks, who's deploying money against content, you know, it's you know, the big guys in private equity, super smart, flush with cash, you know, scale matters. Consolidation is part of their playbook. It's going to be a fierce competition, because, you know, now you're not just talking about games industry leaders that are competitive by nature. You're talking about private equity that's steering the ship in the background, and that's a whole different level.
Right.
I mean, tenacity. So like, yeah, I mean, we're talking about KKR with AppLovin, dude. Those guys are fucking ruthless, man. Like, they're like badass, right? So like, they're pushing this thing fast and furious, and everyone's following. It's like amazing to watch. And I bet you 10 to 1 KKR is out of this thing as soon as they can be, you know? And then they're not going to be there for the collapse, I'll tell you that much. Anyway.
They won't let it.
Or yeah, maybe they'll just keep pushing it forward, huh? I don't know.
But maybe in terms of, like, you know, we talked about Jam City before, and they represent actually a different model. And the way that I characterize the Jam City growth strategy is really around kind of shifting to the earlier stage companies. And to your point, Chris, I think they have like $115 million in cash. So that's kind of what they have the capability of doing. And so to the extent that you know, what kind of opportunity we think they have in terms of going after earlier stage companies, as well as what's clearly an IP-based strategy, right? So we look at their published slate of games. It's like everything's all IP all day. So
I know, for Jam City, we talked about this again on the Deconstructor Fun podcast, but like, ultimately, like, their valuation actually makes sense, right? Because they're not really growing all that much, right? They're growing below the market, yeah. Right? And with the SPAC, they're able to like project going forward. So they're basically grew below the market last year. They're basically growing probably at market, slightly below the market this year, according to their analysts. And then for some reason, all of a sudden, they grow 30% the year after and 30% the year after that, right? So like, they're basically these projections that are insane, right? And it's all organic in theory, anyway, with all this it's all new games, right? And it's new games that I question, yeah. Because they haven't had any success on the core side. And majority of them are core, right? Avatar, Star Wars, I can't remember the other two, but DC, right? And so like, so it's all speculative, right? But at least the valuation makes sense so they can grow into that, right? But like, but I still question whether or not they can actually execute against that SKU plan. And clearly their margins are so bad relative to the comps. I think they were like 5%. Is that right? EBIT last year. So not only are they going to grow revenue at some insane 30% clip for 2 years in the out years, their margin profile is going to go up to like 28% or something insane. So you can't really do both. It's really, really hard to do that, right? And as I said earlier, it's like building new hit products in this market is more and more challenging every day, you know? And I have my doubts.
Yeah, but in terms of the strategy, I think for me it makes sense, right? Trying to go earlier stage, trying to go after IP-based games, the strategy makes sense. But then in terms of their ability to execute against that strategy, I know, Chris, I mean, you're in the thick of kind of, you know, meeting with studios and things like that. Do you think there are viable companies that are acquirable in that earlier stage kind of range, and to what extent do you think that Jam City can pull that off?
I mean, they're always acquirable, I suppose, for the right price. But the challenge you run into when you're looking at earlier stage companies is you don't have necessarily the history of success and enough data to be able to,
right,
you know, deploy capital with any sense of comfort or confidence, right? So Look, I think part of it is just to your point earlier, you know, given the lack of resources relative to bigger players in the market, Jam City doesn't have the ability to play at the top of the market. And when you talk about cash on hand, you also have to remember this is a small point, but it's also still worth reminding people that, you know, especially public companies, but I would say most fiscally responsible companies are not in a position or do have CFOs who will not let the company spend all of the cash reserves, right? So you got to keep a certain amount for operating capital, call it 20 to 30 to 50%. So you got to cut that 115, you know, number by that amount in terms of what's actually usable. They do have the public stock as a currency, which can provide people with upside, of course. But to Chris's point, you know, Jam City has not had a track record of being able to successfully launch new games leading up to the SPAC. You know, then how do you all of a sudden have confidence that they can do it post just because they've now changed from a private to a public company? I don't know what else is changing. I think something else has to change. And then the over-reliance on IP. Look, I mean, I've done as many IP deals as the next person in my history in mobile gaming, and I'm always the one that wants a tempered balance between original and licensed IP, because I think having too much reliance on licensed IP, at least historically to me, has been a little bit dangerous because it plays with your margin profile.
Right.
Maybe post IDFA, you know, once I see more data come out with IP games generating more success, maybe my tune will change. But I think going all IP strategy, you know, is a little bit dangerous. Part of that could be just their contractual obligations, you know, on the tail end of TinyCo. Hopefully they've renegotiated some of those deals. But yeah, I don't know that there's, you know, I don't know where else they have to go. And I guess my question back to you guys is, you know, I'm wondering what kind of market reaction and definition is starting to form when we start hearing about game companies going public via SPAC. You know, we've had enough happen now. You know, it's usually been kind of more fringe companies, right, that have been on the, you know, the kind of skill-based or on social casino. But Jam City seems to be the first traditional mobile free-to-play company that's used a SPAC as a vehicle to go public. And I'm wondering whether the market is starting to see this vehicle as, you know, I don't know, maybe helping companies that can't get there on their own merits. I don't know how else to describe it, but it just seems like there's a profile of types of companies that are emerging that are taking advantage of the SPAC model because the traditional model of going public is not available to them.
Well, these guys already had a broken IPO, right? They filed to go public, I think, right? And they just couldn't get it up.
They may have filed their S-1, but they never ran a process.
But they'd be, part of the reason is because their revenue was going down into the IPO. So it's like, right, that doesn't work. Well, frankly, it worked for Playtika, though. Right? Their revenue was going like this, and they went public. I think the SPACs are we're starting to see them implode. So Skills is basically down over 50% from its high. So that did not go over well. The Play Studios just had a SPAC, right? Remember Play Studios, Mr. Petrovic? That looks like it's not doing all that well. That company makes no sense being public, right? In my opinion, anyway. Like, they only have a few games and they're all social casino. You know, my investors don't touch these things, generally speaking, because they're focused more on the bigger names. But I think there is a lot of people have played on Skills, because Skills is a terrible company. But I don't think you're going to get Fidelity or T. Rowe investing in shit like in Jam City, you know. So
I think Iron Source is also a SPAC, right?
Yeah, are they out? I didn't even see that they were out.
I don't.
What's ticker?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you that it was a little bit like the SPAC thing was a little bit of a land grab. I think it's just, you know, in general, having such a dilutive process because of the, you know, promote and stuff like that. I don't know. I personally don't see the value in it, but yeah. All right, so maybe we could close this out. I know, Chris, you had mentioned kind of your thoughts as far as kind of like the sentiment in the industry about new games or the opportunity for earlier stage companies to grow. So do you want to speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, I guess maybe I'm a little bit biased because, you know, having participated in you know, some of Zynga's, you know, M&A over the last 5 years, you know, it was always surprising to me how there was sentiment from certain corners in the industry about how it was not a real way to grow. You know, because I think as an industry, we have a, you know, romantic notion that all growth should be organic because it comes from a creative place and that's the only way to garner success. But, you know, I think we're in a time in the industry where there's been so much growth. I mean, think about whenever you want to chart day one beginning of mobile gaming, which I would argue is, you know, the V1 launch of the App Store, you know, what was that, 12 years ago, 13 years ago, till now. I mean, the growth rates have been so meteoric and we've saturated all, you know, major tier one markets in terms of players and, you know, anybody that's downloading a game for the first time has already done so. And so like in any industry, you know, creative, interactive, entertainment or otherwise, once you get to that level of saturation and then you start throwing in the mix some existential changes and the rules of the road that make it harder to grow organically, you get in these waves where you can only continue that same pace of growth through acquisition. And, you know, I don't think it's wrong or it's fake, but, you know, I'm hoping that it doesn't stifle innovation and creativity because that's ultimately what's going to prevail in the long run. And I think to your point earlier, as we were talking, that there are certain ways to find some creative, you know, white space that bigger companies just can't do just because the opportunity cost. But I just am always surprised when people harp on M&A as a way to invest in and sustain growth because it's just part of the natural cycle of industries and how they grow.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, my pushback has always been, you know, for Zynga and Stillfront, like I was all on board with Zynga doing their acquisition strategy because I just don't think they have any teams that can really build new products, like fundamentally. Like, I don't think most of their existing teams, I mean, their social casino teams are amazing. Poker is amazing. Manage those IPs and stuff, but Natural Motion and Farmville, I was definitely wrong about the Harry Potter game, right? Like they were able to pull that out. So that I was wrong about that one, but fundamentally the rest of their organization doesn't seem to be. So their only means of growth was through acquisition to some degree. And then Stillfront, right, is the example of like collecting a bunch of assets that are just scaling on top of each other. But as far as I can see, I don't know if they have any capability of building new product in even with like what 18, 20 studios that they might have. I don't know. I still don't know. Right. We don't know because they haven't built anything.
You weren't convinced. Hey, you weren't convinced after that last call.
Not one bit. Like, hey, give me a game that gets out there and scales to 100 million plus. Then we'll talk. Right. But I don't see it. I don't see it. And their growth was anemic last year on the organic side. So anyway, from an investment perspective, and I talk to investors about this stuff all the time, it's like, dude, they really want to see organic growth. Like they still are worried, right? That the ability for people to grow is a fundamental part of having a creative business is to be able to create stuff that's creative, right? Like you can't just acquire it all. I mean, you can to a point, right? But they want to see organic growth. They want to see these teams that you're spending money against build shit, right? That will be, I do think that will be a question that needs to be answered over the next 6 to 12 months. You know, maybe a year to two in a sense, given how we're still seeing pretty frothy market out there. And I think that's where, you know, places like Zynga and Stillfront are going to fall. Right. We're not seeing much from Puzzle Combat, which scares the shit out of me. Farmville looks like a dead DOA type game right now. I have no faith in Natural Motion Star Wars game. So like, where is the growth going to come from Zynga, you know, and then Stillfront the same problem. So investors still want to see it. I just think we're in a different part, you know, a different mindset in the market right now where everything is beloved or whatever, but you're going to have to answer those questions going forward is what I think ultimately.
I think it would be interesting for us at some point to do a deep dive on kind of tearing down the history of the video game sector and quantifying which companies have achieved their status up until now on organic versus inorganic growth, regardless of category, right? So, I mean, perhaps Nintendo is one of the only ones, perhaps Activision, its core Activision business before Blizzard and King, but not very many companies of scale that have been in the industry have grown, to my knowledge, on the back of majority organic growth and internal development.
Right? I will agree to disagree on that. Like, I think all the console guys basically over the last cycle have increased their valuations primarily on organic growth, right? Not new games.
No, but I'm talking about the history of the company.
I know, yeah, but I'm just saying, the valuations of all these companies have increased because of reinvestment in their existing IP. So if it's FIFA Ultimate Team, GTA and GTA Online, Call of Duty and this juggernaut of Call of Duty Online, like those are the type of things that fucking investors absolutely love, right? Because you have the ultimate leverage of leveraging your IP. Like, that is what success looks like for the console guys anyway. And that was the story of the last cycle, right? Now, I agree with you.
Right. GTA was acquired though, right? I mean, GTA was
right. No, sorry. I am agreeing with you sense that a lot of these studios were acquired over the years, but I'm saying that the reason that they've gotten so much attention over the last cycle was because of organic growth, not because of inorganic growth. Like, there haven't been strategic acquisitions. I mean, King was the last one for Zynga, but that was all part of this last cycle, except for Activision. But yeah, no, that would be an interesting kind of like. But because you're totally right. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying that in the medium.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is just that the cadence and the percentage of capital deployed within a given cycle of inorganic against organic is a little out of
whack
for you, right? Like, we agree that there's been a long history of acquired, but those studios after being acquired were reinvested into. And are sustaining over the long haul as opposed to stacking acquisitions.
Right, and what I would say is that the reason I'm bringing this up is because I think EA was getting so much, EA and Activision and Take-Two were getting so much benefit from a valuation perspective, from an investment perspective over the last decade because of this organic growth that they didn't make the required investments in new studios to build new shit, right? And so now they're all kind of struggling to figure out how can we build the next games to take advantage of this organic growth? Because in some ways, like, you know, FIFA, Madden, obviously Call of Duty to a lesser degree, but like they're, and GTA, for instance, have all kind of like hit their like apexes, right? And so now what's going to fill that back in going forward, and how can they continue to grow from here? But they didn't make the necessary investments during that time, in my opinion, right? Activision has no more studios, right? Right. And EA is a little bit better off. Right. But Take-Two has no studios. Right. Really to make new games. And so there wasn't the balance that I think they should have had because they were getting so much benefit from just the organic growth from their existing franchises. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And maybe one note to potentially end on is just as far as I'm concerned, I do believe we're about to see a new wave of opportunity for different kinds of companies to grow. So we know that there's IDFA deprecation coming. One of the potential implications of that would be that the entrenched incumbents may no longer be able to spend $30, $35 per player and create this moat against new companies coming up with games that could then have a much better chance of competing in specific genres, especially more mid-core, hardcore types of games. And then I think the other thing, I know we were talking a little bit about this before, is that I'm seeing so much innovation, especially in China and Japan and Asia generally, against new subgenres that really aren't being tracked. So you talk to a lot of Western game companies and people are totally clueless about some of the new subgenres in terms of like what I'm calling auto defense, which is kind of a branch off of tower defense, asymmetric battle, which is kind of like a innovation against some of the stuff that's come out from the West in terms of like Friday the 13th and Dead by Daylight, games like that. And so we're seeing a lot like idle type games from Japan. I mean, there's a wave of stuff that's coming. Now, not all of it's going to translate to the West, but we are starting to see growth and pickup in the West, even against those games that are heavily Asia focused. So I do think that there's going to be a lot of opportunity for additional growth if you're tuned into kind of what's happening in terms of the industry generally. So
I'm going to agree. I'm going to agree to disagree on this. I would never, I think Asia is its own world. Okay. Japan in particular, and China. I just don't see much. I don't see much dynamic changes in what's going on in the market. We're seeing innovation across most genres, but they're all by the established players, whether it be Fun Plus or Lilith in Forex, and then puzzle genre with the big guys there too.
Yeah, I'll send you a list of some of these games. They're by companies you've never.
Again, we haven't seen the translation of much coming out of Japan and China in the West. I mean, it just doesn't happen as much. And so,
I agree.
So, we'll see if any of these genres come up again. These subgenres like take off. But what does happen, and this is where I kind of agree with what you're saying, is that some of the innovations that happen on the monetization side and the design side get translated over to the West, and Western companies build them with those things. That definitely happens. But those are the definitely things that we keep an eye on to make sure that like we are on top of that.
I think that's a good point that you're raising, Eric, because that's basically when you think back to like the first wave of mobile, right? Like how did Game of War beat Kingdoms of Camelot? Well, you know, Gabe Layden, the CEO, went to Asia with some folks. They studied basically three games that were being developed out of China. They copied VIP, they copied these systems, and then they were able to achieve a 30 to 40% LTV improvement over Kingdoms of Camelot, right. And then they just
bought them out. That's a completely different solve than the idea that some subgenre in Japan, like a dating sim or something, whatever you're talking about, I don't know, can be translated over to here, you know, simply.
Well, but I do think what we can say is that was from a systems perspective, right? Like there were certain systems that could be copied and applied to the West. What I'm saying is that if you look at some of the innovation that's happening from a gameplay perspective, there's a lot of stuff happening. Now, because it's not being tracked specifically, because you don't have like let's say you look at Sensor Tower and you look at the genre subgenre classification is so big, you're not seeing the breakout and huge growth in specific subgenres. But if you did, you'd be like, holy shit, there's actually quite a bit of growth in specific subgenres and against specific type of games where you have to expect some of that stuff to break out in the West. But I also have a question for Chris. Chris, can you talk about any updates in terms of like what Fun Plus is doing from a M&A perspective? Like my guess would be, just so the audience knows, we haven't talked about this, but my guess would be Fun Plus, to me, what makes sense is cross-platform, just because Genshin Impact, and just because that seems like a good area for growth. But I don't know if you can publicly talk about future plans for Fun Plus.
Nice try, but I cannot. Okay. I would rather have you tell me what I should do. I like that better.
TT. Pick off TT from Warner Brothers.
I like it. Premium Lego games? No, I don't know.
But China loves that, right? Like, anyway. All right, guys. I think that's it. Any last words of wisdom, advice, thoughts for the audience?
Don't or
otherwise,
crypto.
We can wrap it up right here. What do you guys think?
<I'm> good.
All right. There we have it, guys. Thanks for joining, guys. And until next time, catch y'all later. Bye.